I thought I was very happy to be skipped was because the research I was going to talk about is about people naturalising as British citizens, and some research just finished for the Home Office about that, and it seemed that was about migrants to the UK, and it seemed to me that the kind of experiences that everyone else has been talking about seemed very far away from that. But there's, I guess, the report will be out after the summer, and you can read it then. I guess there's two things though that listening today to that resonates with some of the issues we've been looking at. There one is around the topic of integration, and I guess this last bullet point integration strategy that you didn't say anything about. But so Mark Carroll from the Department of Communities and Local Government was going to come here today as one of the people that wrote this integration strategy that was published in February, which was called Creating the Conditions for Integration, and defines integration as the conditions for people getting on. So it's kind of creating the conditions for conditions and circular. Definition. The research that we've done, we use the concept of integration, I guess, in exactly the way that Catherine uses it, which is as the processes, the kind of natural processes that people go through when they arrive in a place or come from any kind of marginalized group in terms of the labour market, social life, just what happens when people arrive. Very differently from the way it's used, say, in French government context of assimilation, of everyone has to be the same. And I think in some ways the strategy, the government's integration strategy, creating the conditions for integration, the positive thing about it is it moves away from the discourse under the previous New Labour government of cohesion and integration as a duty placed on migrants to be like, you know, to subscribe to British values, and recognises that integration is kind of a natural process that people just get on with when they arrive in a place. The significant weakness of the creating the conditions for integration, I think, is it talks about inequalities, but it kind of has absolutely nothing to say really about the kind of persistent inequalities that the Lemony Trust have kind of really identified in the last years. It has no strategy for kind of tackling those inequalities. And most significantly, it doesn't use the word racism at all in the whole of that document. I think that's a major issue. The other thing I think in that document that's interesting is it talks about localism and about how the local matters. And I think my worry about that is that for the government that's a way of kind of withdrawing from responsibility for promoting integration. But I guess the flip side of it is something that's been resonated across a number of the papers today is the significance of place and locality, of local identities, local belonging, and local processes, that there isn't a kind of national picture in the UK. The picture is very much a local picture, the happy picture, the sad picture is very specific. And I guess that's one of the main policy lessons is how to think about these kind of issues of persistent inequality, structural exclusion, while also doing justice to really significant local variations and kind of local experiences. So I think those are the kind of, I guess the kind of question of should we as academics or anti-racists buy into a policy discourse around integration tainted by the association with assimilation, which also gives us an opportunity to talk about the processes by which people enter the labour market and face those kind of persistent inequalities, or should we kind of opt out of that policy agenda. My argument is that we need to, that kind of civil society anti-racists need to start kind of introducing kind of critical dimension to the kind of policy around integration, but that we should kind of engage with the concept of integration rather than kind of keep away from it because it's associated with an assimilationism that we're opposed to. The other thing I'm thinking all the way through today, which is maybe not about policy but about politics, the David Starkey quote, which was deeply offensive, but there's one thing that's really significant about that is he was not saying that black people were rioting. He was pointing to the fact that white young people, and I guess the statistics about arrests, significantly mixed heritage young people, were very heavily involved in the riots. He described the culture as black culture, and there's been a number of people talking today about the different identities that young people have and kind of moving in and out of Black British identities and so on. But I'm just wondering about how significant these kind of ethnic and racial categories are compared to the identity of generation, of youth. Mm. The kind of youth experience of policing across Black and white is maybe more significant than the Black experience, although what was the Black experience of policing in the 1980s is now youth experience of racism. If you're a white young man in London, this is kind of an open question, I suppose, how your experience of policing is different from a Black young man in London, but it's perhaps not as different as the experience of, middle-class white. But the generation culture is something beyond race that we're struggling to find the language for, that these kind of labels around ethnicity and race no longer do adequate to kind of youth experience in urban areas. And I think as anti-racists and as academics working in race contexts, we're struggling to kind of shift that language from a kind of identity politics prism into something that does justice to generation adequately. I don't know what the answer to that is, I guess it's one question. So I'll stop there.
Excellent. Thank you so much.